It's time for a comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather. This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today is Betty Resnick. Betty is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, an economist. She talks about the importance of a rules-based trade system.
Yeah, I mean, the trade agreements that allow dispute settlement like USMCA are really useful because we can use those to get to the bottom of some of our disagreements with other countries. For instance, a great example of that right now is the biotech dispute with Mexico, where they are considering banning, they are banning GMO corn use in tortillas, but also considering banning it in other imports. And we believe that is against our trade deal. It's unscientific. And we have a dispute right now at USMCA with Mexico.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today we're joined by Betty Resnick. Betty is an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington, D.C. Betty, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, a little background for anybody who doesn't know Betty and your pathway to AFBF. Did it start on a farm?
Unfortunately, no, but I am from the Midwest. So I grew up in Kansas, outside of Kansas City. I went to Mississippi State for undergrad and graduate school and have a lot of family in Mississippi. So I kind of claim Kansas and Mississippi as home. But then I spent 2.5 years living in Sacramento working on trade policy for specialty crops before coming to Washington, D.C. My husband is in the military, so he took us out here. And yeah, now I've been working at trade as an economist here at Farm Bureau for about a year, and it's been wonderful.
You mentioned trade policy for specialty crops. And, you know, when you talk California and specialty crops like almonds, or if you're from the northern part of California, it's almonds. What?
Take the L out of them is what I'm saying.
They truly rely on trade for what they do. You take trade out of the out of their arsenal, their toolbox, and it can absolutely wreck an industry. Is that a good way to describe how important trade is?
Yeah, so trade really varies among different crops. So cotton, for instance, almost all of our cotton is exported overseas. The same can be said for tree nuts, so almonds, pistachios, walnuts, huge percentages of those are exported, and the U.S. actually produces the majority of the world's tree nuts for a lot of those products. Other crops may be less reliant on a percentage basis for trade. For instance, cherries. I used to work with cherries quite a bit in California. About 10%-ish of cherries are exported, but those are actually the highest value cherries that they are. So sometimes the volumes might not be as significant, but those values are really significant. And that doesn't even go into our some of our row crops, which also have pretty high percentages of exports as well.
Okay, let's dig into the import and export side of this. Government out with the U.S. goods trade balance. Our record was set back in March of 2022 of negative $121 billion. In other words, we import $121 billion more than we export. I went back. It's kind of amazing that it's actually been in my lifetime. I'm not bragging, but March of 1971, wow, I think, was the last time the U.S. had a positive trade balance. When we talk about ag trade balance, however, it's a little different story. What's happened and where are we today?
So historically, we've always had a trade surplus in agriculture. We saw our first trade deficit in agriculture in fiscal year 2019. And now they just released data for fiscal year 2025 projections. We're going to be looking at our fifth of 7 years of trade deficits and new records every year. However, I will say that for the most part, we import and we export slightly different agricultural products. So a trade deficit isn't inherently a problem. It's just, you know, numbers, right? But it is important that we have access for our exports and also that our producers can produce in a sustainable way where they can make a profit. And that is having issues right now.
Yeah, maybe a great way to look at it is steaks. Most of the steaks we consume in the U.S. are born, raised, and processed here in the U.S. However, when it comes to hamburger, what makes a great steak kind of makes more of a fat hamburger. So we have to import for the lean side. So obviously imports are perfect or are good for us. And we consume it. Yeah. And then there are other products that we just flat out don't use. And if we're using livestock, maybe as an example, the offals is a prime example of products we don't normally consume here.
Yeah, there's a lot of great examples of products that, you know, either people are willing to pay a premium for them overseas, like those cherries, or products, especially in livestock, that we just don't consume here. So a cow is going to have a tongue. Not many Americans eat cow tongue, but people in Asia love it. It's a delicacy. So we can export some of those products overseas that don't have a value here. And that's a win-win for everyone involved.
But in order to export, we have to have trade deals. We've had, our most recent free trade agreement was the renegotiation of the NAFTA, now known as USMCA, US-Mexico-Canada agreement. We did have a phase one agreement with China, but that has expired. Has there been any other action going on the trade front?
It's been limited. And frankly, the deals they're working on now, they aren't free trade deals. They're smaller in scope. And at the end of the day, they're not focusing on market access for agricultural products. They have other goals. So free trade agreements have been wonderful for agriculture. We have, and it's also been good for the American consumer. And we would like to see more of them. But like you said, we haven't seen one with a new trade partner in over a decade, since 2012. Yeah, 2012.
Also, when we talk about trade, we kind of have to have rules in place as well. And for example, there is a process in the USMCA. If we've got a disagreement or one of the other countries has a disagreement with us, we can work through some of those deals. And our previous agreements all really sat over at the World Trade Organization. Are rules and the ability to enforce rules important moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the trade agreements that allow a dispute settlement like USMCA are really useful because we can use those to get to the bottom of some of our disagreements with other countries. For instance, a great example of that right now is the biotech dispute with Mexico, where they are considering banning, they are banning GMO corn use in tortillas, but also considering banning in other imports. And we believe that is against our trade deal. It's unscientific. And we have a dispute right now at USMCA with Mexico.
Of course, if we need to go to the World Trade Organization, we've got a mess over there right now. And if we think that trying to get a farm bill through Congress is tough, try to figure out a way to fix what's happening over at the World Trade Organization, which brings us back home since I threw farm bill out there. Not really going to ask you what you think the odds of a new farm bill this year would be, but what is the state currently of the U.S. ag economy? I mean, we can look at the general economy and draw some conclusions. Where are we as far as ag in the U.S.?
Well, I would say the whole economy as a whole is doing pretty well, especially compared to the rest of the world. I mean, we've been chugging along with quarter after quarter of a strong economy, strong job market. The agricultural economy is really struggling right now. Crop prices have returned to 2020 levels and expenses for farmers have not. So we have increased input costs of about 30% or so, while the prices have dropped about 40% or so in a lot of cases since those highs that came after the war in Ukraine. And that leaves farmers in a really tight spot. We've had a net farm income fall 2 years in a row. One was, I think, 17%. And now this year is forecasted to fall at 25%, so 37% over 2 years. I mean, you can't ask many Americans to cut their paycheck by nearly 40% over 2 years. So farmers are really feeling it right now.
Is there a path forward? I know that your marching orders from Farm Bureau come from your members, your Farm Bureau members at the state level. Have they spoken out yet on pathways forward? And then I'll throw the last one in there. You've got a convention that comes up the first of the year. How important is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, people are really starting to raise the alarm bells about the farm economy. And in a lot of that way, you know, this is why we need a farm bill. It's becoming very abundantly clear that the farm economy is headed into in pretty tough straits. And that is what we're supposed to have an updated farm bill for. And we haven't had an updated farm bill. We haven't had reference prices increase for the PLC program since it was put into inception about a decade ago. And that is just very tough because farmers are seeing their profits diminish and oftentimes actually be losses. So farmers need to keep telling their legislators, keep raising their voices and saying that this is not acceptable and that we do need some change. So I think that that's one pathway is the farm bill. And that is one way we're really trying to push for at American Farm Bureau.
And again, that American Farm Bureau Federation's annual meeting comes up in January. It's an opportunity to really decide where the organization goes, but it starts at the county level. For somebody who's not involved at the county level, do you have like a quick elevator speech on why it's important to be involved?
So I don't think a lot of people realize this, but American Farm Bureau is an incredibly grassroots organization. What you're alluding to, our policymaking process. I have a book on my shelf over here, those big white books. That's our policy. So that is the book that as an employee, we are given and told to make happen. So that all starts out at the county level and it goes to the state level and then to the federal level. And people hash it out. They debate what they want their policy to be in that policy book. And that is all happening right now at a lot of county levels. By December and January, it'll be up to the national level. And I encourage farmers to get involved because we are the largest organization for agriculture nationally. And we have a great voice, but we need to hear from our members what direction they want us to run in. So it's a really great opportunity to get involved from so many standpoints, from leadership standpoints, and also to help, you know, making our policy is kind of one of the most important things our members can do.
And you can learn more about Farm Bureau online, fb.org, fb.org. Betty Resnick is an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington, D.C. on today's Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Attention, High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association proudly presents Your Legacy is Tomorrow's Water. We're joining forces with partners across Texas to restore 50 Playa Lakes, crucial for recharging the Ogallala Aquifer and supporting our unique wildlife. Be a part of this transformative initiative. Visit PlayasWorkForTexans.com for more details. Let's secure our water legacy together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Betty Resnick with the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Sorghum farmers, it's your time to shine. The 2024 National Sorghum Producers Yield Contest is open for entries. Compete in divisions like irrigated, dryland no-till, dryland tillage, and food grade. No matter where you farm, east or west, let's yield greatness together. Contest rules and entry forms are online at sorghumgrowers.com/yieldcontest. Enter by November 26 and harvest the win.
In this heat, you're concerned about both the health of your animals and their performance. Strobel Super Shades can reduce the dangerous ground temperatures 30 degrees or more. Strobel Super Shades, the best-built cattle shades in the industry, available in 40 by 40 with 1,600 square feet of shade or 20 by 20, proven to protect your cattle and increase your gains. Go to StrobelShades.com for more. StrobelShades.com. Welcome back. You're listening to our comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen.
We've been working with a number of different federal agencies in partnership with DEE and in partnership with Exarban. In our office, we've put a lot of energy into working on grants, and the EPA grant, really a big day because they released, I think, 26 grants, and we were the fourth highest, and $307 million. So it's an incredible, I call it, infusion of equity into Nebraska. It's going to help Nebraskans across all spectrums, from people that need to lower their electrical costs for the house with solar panels to enhancing precision agriculture, to improving our measurements across the state, to building more transformers, electricity. So this is really a game changer. It's a start to helping us turbocharge our economy.